Hi, this is Jim of the Vintage Gamer. I'm not quite ready to do my Origins report yet, but I thought you might like to hear a recording that I took of the podcasting panel that Paul Tevis set up at Origins. This is the panel that happened on Saturday and featured all of the gaming podcasters, including yours truly. The sound quality actually turned out quite well, considering I used a little iRiver and a little built-in microphone. So sit back and enjoy. It's about an hour long. Oh, and by the way, this is released under Creative Commons, so for the other gaming podcasters, if you want to throw this up on your feeds, feel free.
Hi, I'm Paul Tevis. Welcome to Game Podcasters Q&A, I think is what we're calling this panel, and I have assembled this rogues gallery of people who are involved in gaming podcasts, mostly to sort of talk about whatever it is that we all and you all feel like having us talk about. I'm going to ask everybody to briefly introduce themselves, and in the briefest possible terms, my name is Paul Tevis. I host a podcast called Have Games Will Travel, which you can find at havegameswilltravel.net, and I review role-playing card and board games and give my thoughts on various things in those areas.
Mike Sugarbaker, Ogre Cave Audio Report, ogrecave.com. We talk about role-playing, plus everything else, plus the industry, because one of us, who is not here for this show, is a retailer, and we get a lot of his perspective, and it's fun.
I am Jeff, and this is Caroline and Sasha.
We don't speak!
Only he speaks!
I'm not being
Yeah, we do Gamer the Podcasting. It's a podcast on
all things
gaming, but we kind of focus on live-action role-playing.
That's our favorite, so that's what we aim for.
My name is Don Dem. I do a podcast named called Pulp Gamer with co-hosts Derek and Jeremiah, who couldn't make it. But we're at pulpgamer.com.
I'm Jim Van Verth. I do the Vintage Gamer podcast at vintagegamer.net. And I cover older board games, card games, RPGs, and computer games.
I'm Tom Vassell, host of the Dice Tower from Dice Tower, thedicetower.com. Also hosted at boardgamenews.com. Best news place around. We talk about pretty much mostly board games and card games.
I'm Mike Stackpole. I don't actually have a gaming podcast. Mine is a How to Write podcast called The Secrets. But I also run the Science Fiction Podcast Network and the Gaming Podcast Network. And we look at collecting up the, you know, finding a central place for all of the shows. So if you want to be finding gaming shows, that sort of thing, you know, you come to this one spot and you don't have to search through all the directories that misfile everything everywhere. So, I mean, none of us would be in the same category, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think my show once got filed under Home Improvement in some directory.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel that my home is improved by having games in it. So just before we really get started, has anybody here never listened to a podcast? Okay, good. Has anybody heard? Yeah. Has anybody never listened to my podcast? Podcasting is something that's really, as a form, has not been around very long, and specifically with regards to gaming, is very, very new. I mean, almost all the gaming podcasts have started in the last 12 months, if not 18 months. And it's something that I think is really interesting in the way that it's starting to build a community and really starting to open up some interesting avenues of dialogue. So the reason I wanted to get this panel together was just to set, as an opportunity for the people who listen to podcasts to ask questions of and to interact with the people who like to talk a lot. We get to say what we want to say, and we don't always necessarily get the opportunity to find out what people want to know about or what they think about our show. So I don't really have anything in particular prepared, and since this is a Q&A session, I figured we'd open up to questions right off the bat. So we are yours. Anybody want anything else? What we got? What we got?
I apologize if you've been asked before, but how much of an influence were Dirk and Aldi on you and Joe starting your podcast?
They were some. I never thought we could do it. It was much more listening to Mark Johnson, because he did a podcast and he basically said, anybody can do this. Why not think about doing it? And I said, hey, we have all this audio equipment sitting around. Let's why not try and see what happens? I didn't know how far it would go. And the more we did it, the more we liked it.
And anybody else share that sentiment? That's very, very true. And now, you know, you guys are putting out how many thousands of hours more than Dirk and Aldi each year?
Dirk and Aldi are?
We're not recording this, are we?
The guys who run BoardGameGeek.com, if you're not familiar with Scott Alden and Dirk Silko, did one of pretty much the first gaming podcasts.
Yeah, probably.
Board Game Speak. Because they were doing it back in 2004. And it was them drinking and rambling. And interviewing people and getting their shows hijacked by Renner Media and all sorts of stuff. But sadly, their output has vastly tapered off.
Anybody else is recording this? I'm gonna.
Yeah.
Well, I am.
Oh, okay. I just expected to see the table like bristling with recording equipment.
I figured there'd be one to be okay.
I should have brought my laptop.
Who's next?
Well, record that in. Sorry.
Does anybody up there not hate the sound of their own voice? And if you do, how did you get past that?
It's more getting used to it.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I used to listen to, like, every show we did, and I've kind of tapered off with that, but I kind of listened to myself, and if, you know, if I found things that, like, I hated about the way I was saying it, then I could change it for the next time.
He would call me and be like, it's fine, believe me. I just never...
like, oh my gosh, at 22:33, I say this horrible thing.
I'm like, it's fine, leave it alone.
Yeah, the editing, the work that goes into editing kind of decreases as time goes on, too.
Yeah.
You learn to just get used to it.
Fortunately, out of the three of us, I do the editing, so I get to pick and choose. It ends up just being them talking when I'm done editing, but, you know.
My wife says that I sound stoned. Because she says I don't sound as animated as I am in real life. And I've gotten to the point where when I'm listening to the show, it's not my voice that I'm listening to. For some reason, I don't hear myself when I'm doing it anymore. It's just it's that guy who does have Games Will Travel, whoever he is.
Yeah, when I listen to our shows, like, I sometimes forget the things that I said, and so I'll surprise myself. And I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't know I said that. That was really smart.
That's one of the interesting things is that since you do, I mean, you do a group show, it's the three of you on there, and it's much more of a, and how many people, okay, who here does a show by themselves? The three of us.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting, I find, the interplay between there, because it's hard to surprise yourself with brilliance when you're by yourself, because you usually know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Whereas I really like the group panel style, because you get a lot of really interesting interactions, and it goes places that you didn't think it was going to go.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it helps with the flow, because you can actually see the person that you're talking to, and you can kind of take visual cues on who speaks when and stuff. I mean, we tried a Skype cast at one point. It was a lot more difficult because Caroline was up in Connecticut. Jeff and I were down in New York, so
that's what we do all the time.
You know?
Yeah. We're
for some reason we can't get used to it. So.
It's a pain. It really
it's gotta
pain.
Be hard. Yeah.
We started to go downhill quite a bit.
One here.
Has anybody started into vidcasting?
Yes.
We have. We
did one vidcast. We have another one in the can that we're editing right now.
You did two vidcasts.
Yeah. Everyone was saying we're taking a break.
But that was kind of a cop out, yeah.
But there's not a whole. We do live action games, so there's, you know, we've got tutorials and stuff on special effects and all that, so we can do that. But
a lot of it's very visual. I mean, I can tell you how to make a boffer weapon, but, you know, listening to it, you're going to be like, what are you talking about? You know, this is excruciatingly boring, shut up.
But with
the vidcast, we can show you, and then we can fight and stuff, and that's kind of fun.
But with the other gaming podcasts, it's like, there's not too much that they can get out, that they can't get out there without audio.
Gaming is not really a spectator sport.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, you know, one of the problems with the video stuff.
Do you want to talk about Scott?
Yeah. Oh, I was
Board Games with Scott is a vidcast that I particularly like, and he takes good advantage of the video format. Because he is explaining games, and he can actually show you the bits. You know, here's what the cards look like, here's what the board looks like, and so for his format, it works very, very well.
And I didn't want to duplicate what he did, and also video downloads are so much larger. People complain about how large the audio ones are. And the podcast craze itself started because people want to listen to something in transit. You can't watch when you're driving, and
that's
so
true.
The audio reaches so much more people. Video is so specialized, it's a lot of work.
Also, if I did video, it would be chopped into little tiny pieces, so you'd be like seeing freeze frames of me, because I edit like crazy.
I have a face for radio anyway. So.
Yeah.
I think there's still a higher proportion of people on dial-up connections amongst gamers than there is amongst the general internet population. That's my impression anyway, just from the number of complaints I get about how long the podcast takes to download. It may just be that there's a higher proportion of complainers among gamers, but...
Yes! Ken Hyde says to me, I would listen to your show because you tell me how brilliant I am, but I'm on dial-up, so...
He writes games for a living. No wonder he's on dial-up.
Nowadays, dial-up is... I thought dial-up was starting to peter off.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Oh,
I'm true. It definitely depends on your kind of gamer, too, because someone who's going to be playing WoW all the time is not going to have a dial-up.
No. Very, very true. Who else? What do we got? Murray, were you raising your hand? Or were
no,
you
I'm just watching.
Okay, you got it.
How long does it take? You heard a lot about editing. How long do you guys spend editing each show?
For us, we would usually get together on Monday, take maybe two and a half, maybe even 3 hours if we're goofing off a lot. Record the podcast, and then we just stay up till maybe 3-4 in the morning, and...
And how long is your show?
An hour and change.
Okay.
Yeah, we try and aim to be, like most of our shows come out to be an hour and 17 minutes, so something like that.
Whereas, Mike, your show is very different because you're 20 minutes and...
Well, yeah, I keep it right in around there. It's one of those things, if you're doing a show by yourself, I think you go much over 15 minutes, you're really asking a lot out of the audience. And so, you know, I try and keep it trimmed down. And what I find is and talking to the guys who do... the Dragon Page shows, all of us, at least in the Phoenix community, we all sort of use roughly a 4x multiplier. So whatever your show is, it takes roughly 4x between pre and post production to get it all straight. And you know, like Jim, I edit like crazy because I can't stand all the ums and ahs. And to your earlier point about the voice, a lot of software filters, compressors, things like that will make your voice sound a lot more rich, a lot better. And it may shift it just enough that you're able to get by, or you can really radically alter it with really strange filters. So.
We're going to try a game today.
the 4x multiplier definitely rings me, but
yeah,
rings true with
so.
Me as well.
I think.
Everyone's experience.
Maybe. Ever since I added audio clips to my show, the pre-production has massively increased because
right.
I get them all ready to play. And post-production doesn't seem to decrease.
Right.
Because I still have to go back and make sure that everything's level.
Because Tom's show now is much more of a... You've got like 7 or 12 different contributors now, and it's almost a...
I've cut it down to five per show.
A variety show.
Yep. I aim for a variety show thing, which is great. It's less preparation for what I'm going to say, but it's more preparation editing-wise.
Yeah. Well, I actually hate sound editing, so I spend a lot of time... I actually script my show.
Yes, so do I.
So that I don't have to spend as much time editing out... Oh, God, what did I say here?
Yeah.
This is
for my second season, I scripted every episode, every word, and I have actually just stopped doing that.
Yeah.
So I don't sound stoned. but I think that for a solo show, that's highly appropriate, depending on what feel you're going for.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll outline instead of scripting. I don't care for scripting, but if you outline, you can still keep it somewhat spontaneous.
That's what we do.
And that's what I've gone back to.
Do you actually script word for word?
In the second season, I would write out the whole.
How long does it take?
Wow.
Well, I do a roughly 20-minute show. That's roughly 4,000 words. So.
How long does it take you?
Usually, I'd write it in about 3 hours. It varied. I would have scripts at various stages of preparation. Like when I would do reviews, you know, I'd work several reviews ahead, and so I'd have things that were half completed. How long does it take you guys when you script? Because we do about the same length of show, the three of us.
Mine used to take a while, but I've gotten much faster at it recently because it's just like, all right, I don't have time for this. So I just sit down, spend a night, and just script it out. And actually, I don't read it word for word all the time because I'll go through and I go, oh, that phrase doesn't work, so I'll just say something about the same but a little different.
Yeah, I think it takes me about... it's about a chapter's worth of script. So it's and a chapter for a novel will take me about... an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours to write.
Mike's the professional writer.
I'm the guy who does it for a living. But I read it largely largely word for word, but throw in wise-ass remarks and you know, just sort of riffs off of certain things, because even, you know, what sounded good when I was typing it out, it's like, oh man, this is totally staid. Okay, time to break it up here, you know? Somebody better be having fun.
Yeah, I did a lot of speech and debate in high school, and I learned to write how I speak, so I can write dialogue for myself relatively easily.
Definitely. I write about an hour script, but we use, following the same method every show. I know some people don't like it. They want diversity. But if we follow the same type of script, I can cut and paste and add things in, and it saves me trouble. We follow an outline because even if I wrote my script, I'd say it differently anyway. So why waste the time?
Yeah.
But for us, we spend sometimes an hour, 2 hours researching the top 10 list. It just takes us that long to get it ready, depending on what it is, how obscure.
And I will say the one reason that I keep pretty close to the script and stuff is I'm doing a how to write show.
Right.
And so actually being able to collect those scripts and make them available later on in PDF format is something that I'll do, because the show that I do is an adjunct to a How to Write newsletter that I've got. So, you know, it's sort of an infomercial for that. And so I've got that product that people already are subscribing to and downloading. And when I get enough of these scripts together, I'm going to slap them all into one big book and say, look, you know, here it is in case you want it with the notes and stuff like that. So.
That's cool.
Yeah, question.
Yeah, you mentioned you had speech experience in school. What are the other
fellows?
Did they have, like, speech experience or
verbal
experience? Something that gives them experience speaking, you know, even theater?
Yeah.
Theater
experience
is helpful.
Theater.
Just being a big old ham.
Also, gaming.
Yeah.
Gaming. I took a speech class in college. That's about it.
I preach.
That and gaming.
Yeah. And this being my 25th or 27th origins, pretty much, you know, it's all the speaking you need to do.
I mean, it's the sort of thing where, you know, I like to talk. That's why I do a podcast. Turns out I'm reasonably good at it, and other people occasionally like to listen to what I have to say. But.
Yeah, I did radio in college.
I did too. And I was a tour guide. And that's speaking, oh God. 350 million years ago, this entire area was underwater.
So you can talk
I can
walk
still
backwards.
Remember that.
Walking.
Yeah, yes.
Walking.
In a cave.
Over here
in a
flat.
Cave.
There's another question back here.
Yeah, I was just curious. Sorry, I came in late. But
how dare you?
Distribution goals. Do you have targets? We all appreciate that you do what you do. But do you have ideas of how you're planning or trying to reach other audiences?
Where do I want to start? Let's go.
Podcasting is all about niches, certainly at least. My podcast's content has been gravitating more and more about, well, how do we grow our niche? You know, is our niche threatened? Is anybody working on growing it, or are people just working on squeezing it until it's finally bone dry?
You're talking about the gaming industry.
I'm talking about the gaming industry, but also then, you know, when I noticed that we were on that theme for many weeks, then I kind of listened to a show and said, oh, well, hey, if somebody hadn't been following the gaming industry for a good long while, listened to my show, they would be completely baffled. So it kind of cuts both ways.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why I put together the Gaming Podcast Network and stuff, so all the shows could leverage our audiences against each other's. And the way we've reformatted the whole network stuff is to bring all the gaming shows are listed side by side with the science fiction shows and other shows that we bring in. So anybody who is generally interested in the category of podcasts now is able to come over here and go, oh, I didn't know there were gaming podcasts. I didn't know there was this. I didn't know there were that.
Yeah.
So it's a question of just trying to get exposure. And one of the big problems that I saw, so one of the reasons to do the network directory things, was that everybody gets on every directory. There's no sorting for quality. There's no figuring out whether or not you want to do this. God help you if you go to Libsyn's directory, at least this is my experience, and you go to download a sample show, it may or may not ever get into your computer just because it can be really slow, and it's just really, really frustrating. So, you know, we wanted to have one place to help everybody grow.
Yeah.
Mike, do you let people critique the shows, review them?
We do have, with the new format that we went to, we have, we offer a number of things. One, every show's got a program page, and people can rate the show on overall quality, sound quality, that sort of thing, so you'll get a star rating on your show. We have forums. We have
who sets those ratings?
It's the listeners.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody, any listener goes in, clicks. Once you voted, you know, then you voted for that show. So
it's like Amazon.
Yeah. It's exactly like Amazon in that sense. You know, we have forums where people can come in and talk about the show, what they like, what they don't like. on engaging a lot of different stuff. You know, we've got a news center. We put together bumpers so that, you know, everybody can cross-promote. And, mm-hmm. you know, we'll get people. Well, heck, you did bumpers when we were at Gen Con. So, you know, so we can try and get people in the industry to do bumpers and make it kind of interesting.
I mean, I think, like anything in the gaming industry, the most powerful force for growth and for promotion is word of mouth.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
putting out a quality product and telling people about it. And I know that within podcasting, we do a lot of cross-promotion. Yep. So I hear about it. I mean, I heard about your show from the guys who do Sons of Cryos. I heard about, and we're a lot of people who are doing podcasting are listening to other shows and finding the shows that are similar to what they do and things that, or completely different from what they do, mm-hmm. and recommending them to other people. But I do think it's important that we need to continue to grow it sort of outside of that community as well. Tom, you've got something to
Yeah, they. I know we're all one big happy family. Hooray.
No, we're not.
But,
no, we're not.
But when it comes to, when I read my blogs, and I read the gaming blogs, and every day I open it up, and there's 50, 60 of them, and I'm a really fast reader. I can just breeze through all of them. But it doesn't matter how fast a reader I am. I only have the same amount of time. And so with the podcast, it's much, much more competitive, where people will only listen to so many, because they only have so much time. Well, some people listen to all of them, but that's a different story. While I'm not directly competing with everyone else, I want to make sure that I have the best board game podcast out there if possible. And so I'm always trying to do what I can ahead. And anyone who reads my reviews know I post them on every website in the world. And I'm trying to get the podcast to be the same way, because exposure is what brings it out. The more people who hear it, the more people who listen.
And it's also, it's like a lot of it, you get a lot of listeners by going up to people and kind of educating them on what podcasts actually are. Yeah. I mean, like, everyone here knows about what podcasting is, and they'll at least listen to one episode of the other shows if they hear a promo. Yeah. But there's, like, so many people out there who would love them if they knew what they were.
Yeah.
So you create the pod site, you put it on, I assume, your own website.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
So I guess that's really just kind of a question. I mean, I see what you're doing. This question is kind of for everybody else. You're creating this community. You're saying, hey, I'm going to be a resource of all these. So that most of you basically rely on the podcast being your site, or you hooked up to some commercial site, or...
I'll start, because I'll tell you what I do.
Okay.
Anybody else here use Libsyn?
No.
Okay, and then no one else gets. Everyone else gets to talk about what they do. There's a company called Libsyn, Liberated Syndication, Libsyn.com. They're a podcast hosting service, essentially. So I just very simply, because I feel like investing minimal time and energy into this, registered HapGamesWillTravel.net, do a redirect to HapGamesWillTravel.libsyn.com, which is their website for me. I upload the MP3, do the blog entry, that's it.
So
I can customize that web page.
So you're using that as...
And that is all I'm doing.
Okay.
So that's me.
Yeah, we just... I've got my art site, because I'm an illustrator, but we just host the podcast on there. We bought the domain name, gameofpodcasting.com, and we registered on iTunes.
Right.
Yeah.
Most of our listeners come from promotion, like cross-promotion through other podcasts, but we also got a lot from advertising on webcomics, too. Like, lots of webcomics, like, people who like webcomics also like gaming, and so, you know, we got the first day that we had it up, we had, like, 1,000, like, million hits on our site, and they, like...
You heard it here first, 1,000 million.
I think we win, I don't know.
But we ran out of bandwidth that day.
Yeah.
That can be a problem.
Yeah.
As if Penny Arcade links to your site, that's bad.
What about you guys? You each have, like, your own site, and that's your portal, or...?
I have my own site, but it's only a front to... It's for my reviews, my written ones, but I hooked up with Rick Thornquist from Board Game News. When I first did a podcast, I didn't have my own website, so I asked him to host it, and I thought we could help each other out, because...
Right. So other than word of mouth, that's probably the most likely way someone will find your podcast and will see a link to it or something.
No, Board Game Geek, putting a note up there probably gets them more than...
Various forums and community sites are the best place to... Because there are already people who are obviously online who are interested in gaming, and you sneer at that.
Have a nice community site.
Got one here.
Does it ever happen that any of you get feedback from someone who just fumbled across your podcast and said, hey, this sounds cool?
I got one from Mike that way.
Yeah.
I put up my first episode, and I was like, eventually I should tell Mike about this. A day later, Mike's like, hey, I see you have a podcast.
Well, it was because I talked to Paul about podcasting this year at this convention last year, you know, and he's going, oh, this sounds interesting, and then bang, you know, just run across it, and it's like, oh, cool, all right, this is great.
My experience with Mike was very similar. I was like, I got to make sure I introduce myself to Mike because I know he's going to be. I think it was at Gen Con last year. I said, hi, Mike, I'm Don. He says, oh, yeah, I've heard your podcast. I like it. I was like,
exact same thing happened with us at Gen Con last year.
So that does happen. It's kind of funny. But
I have a case where someone said, I like, you know, this type of gaming, and then I listened to your podcast for some random reason. And
We get that a lot because while we do a podcast that's about, you know, everything RPG, we also kind of like specialize in LARP, and a lot of people who play tabletop games don't LARP, and so they start to get interested in it through the podcast, and we've gotten so much feedback like, oh, I started LARPing and I love it, and it's all thanks to you guys, and it's pretty cool. We actually had a few people actually start LARPs up that had never played or ran a LARP before, and you know, it really brought their communities together. It's
and that's
cool.
What I love about this thing.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the best thing, is when people are really moved by what you're telling them, and they actually, you know, they go out and they run a game, or they, you know, get people together. That's the coolest thing.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, it's also, you know, Americans, for whatever reason, tend to think of just America, but this goes well beyond. I mean, this is worldwide.
Yeah.
You can see in your stats where people are coming in from, and you know, I've ended up picking up subscribers to my newsletter from Europe, from Australia, you know, all over the place, just because they're listening to it, they're interested, and so it's a much bigger community than we would, you know, normally imagine.
I'm actually going to be taking a trip to France this summer and meeting up with a couple of my listeners while I'm there.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Which is really cool. That's cool. I just wanted to say one thing to jump off of what Caroline was saying, is that the thing that makes podcasting exciting for me is that we are all doing this because these are topics that we are passionate about, that we have invested ourselves in, and that is what makes other people excited about them. Because they can tell, you know, when they listen to Tom's show, they know Tom loves games. He loves board games. He loves all of them.
Yeah.
No, you know, that when you listen to Ogre Cave, you know that Mike cares about the industry. That, you know, when you listen to their show, that you care about LARP. And that it is people's excitement and their investment in their hobby that allows podcasting to grow the hobby.
Yeah.
And that's what I really enjoy about podcasting. So you had a question.
And this is for the entire panel. Aside from the people on the panel, what other podcasts would you recommend? Just one from.
We get to pick one each.
One.
Within the gaming industry or just in general?
Yeah, gaming. Dragon's Landing podcast.
Yeah.
Dragon's Landing. Chuck and Lonnie
are great guys.
URL.
DragonsLanding.com. Any of these you can type in there.
Go ahead, Director. We've got them. It's all there.
The Durham 3 podcast.
Where's Clinton? He was supposed to be
Clinton's
here.
He probably sounds happy when he has to work the booth.
Yeah,
Clinton R. Nixon and Jason Morningstar and their friend Ruby Troyer, who is not yet a published RPG designer but may get there. They play some indie RPG every week. They record a little before and a little after. It's 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's great. I don't know the URL offhand.
Yeah. What's the name of it? The Durham
3. Durham 3. They all live in North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
They all live in Durham, North Carolina.
All right, we'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, you do. They're very good. I particularly like a new show that just popped up called Fear the Boot. Feartheboot.com. It's a role-playing show, and it's a roundtable discussion, very, very professionally done, and some really great how-to advice for how to run role-playing games. I just discovered it, like, last week, and I've listened to it. I've got about 7 episodes now. I've downloaded this all. Very good. Feartheboot.com.
Also, harpingmonkey.com, they host 2 different shows. The Roundtable is pretty good. They tend to talk about myth and how to incorporate that into mostly tabletop games.
They're just a fun.
Yeah. They're really, really fun to listen to. Those are a great couple guys.
You had actually mentioned, you heard about us from Sons of Cryos. Sons of Cryos is a really great podcast.
As moderator, I will throw in my second suggestion. Mark Johnson's Four Games to Go is absolutely fantastic.
No, I got another thing.
Sorry, Tom. Did you tell me about Four Games? Sorry.
My favorites are here, so.
Right. That's why I went first.
Boy. I'll say Eric Burgess's Board Game Babylon.
Board Game Babylon. Eric Burgess. Eric and Mark and I have actually all met because we're all part of the same gaming group in Los Angeles. We joked that we were going to form Voltron.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's already mentioned all the stuff that I've had a chance to listen to or not. Is working for a living thing, kind of.
Yeah.
Right
here.
Yes, I heard it mentioned very briefly, but I'd like to ask the entire panel. iTunes as a distribution channel, good, bad, or indifferent?
Good.
Great.
Yeah.
Important.
I think podcasting really benefited from iTunes getting in there and putting that little button, for subscribing.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't think you can ignore it.
Yeah.
I'm post
iTunes. I started podcasting after iTunes had already added podcast support. So,
and
actually looking at my statistics, the majority, it's something like 75% of my downloads are through iTunes.
When iTunes has any kind of problem, I get emails that day, tons of them.
They expect you to fix it.
I started just before iTunes, before 4.9 went online, and I noticed a significant jump in bandwidth usage. Just because people were going out and they were trying a little bit of everything. But as I say, once you look at your stats, the vast majority of things are coming through iTunes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although it is a pain to deal with sometimes.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
How many of us use FeedBurner? Anybody?
I use FeedBurner.
No, Mac person.
FeedBurner?
FeedBurner is a...
We set it up.
It's a feed burning tracking service.
Yeah.
I don't use it. You use it?
I use it.
I use it too.
We set up an account. We just never got around to using it for tracking purposes.
Yeah. Libsyn provides perfectly good stats for me, so I'm glad.
Yeah, we were thinking about doing it for a month just to kind of see.
What kind of listeners we have.
It's free. Question.
How big is the audience for your shows, and are they consistently growing?
Oh, I was waiting for somebody to ask that because we're all like, well, I've got.
Okay, this is really difficult because I think probably everybody's got a different way of calculating the stats. So take it that there's no Nielsen ratings for podcasts yet that are certified, acceptable, and stuff like that. So anything any of us is going to say falls really into to use the technical term, a wild ass guess. But it's an educated wild ass guess.
We got 1,000 million here, though.
1,000 million.
Well, I got twice as many as they do.
I'll start, and that's Libsyn provides a service where I like to show you average number of downloads per show, and you can do a bunch of analysis with it. But basically, I'm running. For an average episode across the first 30 days it's available, because one of the beauties of podcasting is that the show is out there forever,
right.
And advertisers should be mindful of that, that it's about 850 average downloads, and it is increasing. It increases for me that average, and that's averaged over the 66 shows that I have done. That average increases about 25 to 50 a month. Varies on depending on the month. So that's what they tell me.
I'm willing to hazard a guess that I'm the only person on this panel who has not checked how many listeners he has.
Why do I find that hard to believe?
I don't care. It's not why I do it. And I'm not the only person who can go check, so Alan probably knows.
Alan knows.
I can call him. No.
We don't really have...
Yeah, we have no definitive number.
Yeah, we tried checking the stats,
but
probably somewhere around
like probably 1,000.
Yeah.
Because we definitely have, at least 200 and some odd people on the Frapper map, but, looking at the statistics and all the downloads that, unless those people are downloading the podcast 5 times, then...
Sometimes, when the software screws
up. Some people do stream stuff, which is, totally bizarre.
So either way, someone's not listening to us, because every episode we tell them to join the Frapper map, and then some people don't. But I remember in, our first episodes, we were excited to have 16 people, and now it's
And
then you see that they grow real fast, and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, now we definitely have hundreds, and it's kind of oh, wow.
All across the world, too.
Yeah, I just want to call out that point, because it's really not important how many people listen to you. It's important how many people obey you.
Yes. That's very true.
That's what I do this for.
There seems to be actually a very common number going across the board, because some of my best shows have topped over 1,000 for, I'd say, about 30 days. I look directly at my weblogs. FeedBurner does tracks. This does tracking. Got a lot of things, but really, you know, the number of downloads that I can get, and again, those stay there. So it's been a while since I've looked at mine too. It's been actually quite some time, but
I'm checking every day.
Yeah. You can't tell
I did that for a long time.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. That's it. Hold on. Let me see. Is this still working? It's all done on another one. Yeah.
But I got this. Because we do interviews, it also fluctuates quite a bit. I mean, when I interviewed Margaret Weiss, and she linked me, that was great.
And that's actually one of the best ways to get more listeners is to interview people who then link to you. Or when I do product reviews, like I reviewed some stuff for Green Ronin. And they linked to me off their website, and suddenly that episode had 200 more downloads.
Mm-hmm. First of all, I'd like everybody in the room to go listen to my podcast.
Then it's whatever it is, plus one, two.
Yeah. Let's see, from FeedBurner I get subscribers, and that's running about 300 now. And based on my download stats, I'm running about 650 per show. And that, again, depends on what the show is. Because what happens is I post it on BoardGameGeek, and if people are interested, then they'll go download it. And if they're not, well, they won't.
We run, I think, an average of 2,000, maybe a little over. I know some of the shows got 3,000 plus just because of the topic or because of whatever. If I forget to post on BoardGameGeek, it drops 500 about. If I mess up the feed, the iTunes feed, that's, 1,000 or so.
Yeah.
But when everything goes right, it's about 2,000 or so. And it really fluctuates. When I thought when Joe left, it would change, but all the people who left were replaced by people who were happy he left. So it worked out pretty well.
I get a kick out of from my listeners listening to what other podcasts they listen to.
Yeah.
And myself, I hear Murr, I hear Paul Tevis, and I hear Dice Tower a lot.
Oh, and the Frapper thing that they mentioned, that really helped. When I saw that there was 400 people puts things up there, or it's almost 500 now, that's people I know listen. And the contest entries, whenever I have a contest, I encourage email feedback.
So
and you get 400 or 500 of those.
Do you have a higher obeyance percentage than...
Sorry.
Well, the percentage of people who obey.
We have people ready to be militant for us, so that's what I'm aiming for, is building an army. But.
So hopefully that at least answers some questions.
I don't want people to obey me because then they know to buy old games.
Right.
Yeah, but Crazy U-Girl will sponsor you.
Yes.
So, yeah.
That's right.
Back here.
Just out of curiosity, what do you all do job-wise? Second question to that is, do you have aspirations of your hobby becoming a job? If it's not already.
I'm a software engineer in my day job. My aspiration is to get my hobby to pay for itself. And I do this through a variety of things. Podcasting is primarily a marketing tool for me, because I'm also a freelance writer, and I do some gaming writing there. But my aspirations are relatively meager. I also am working for Adventure Retail here at the show. So I do a variety of things, but my aspirations with regards to gaming and is to make my gaming self-supporting and continue to keep my wonderful day job and my wonderful job, because those are both nice.
I'm also a software engineer. I figure at least 40% of the panel. Yeah.
If you're a software engineer, you can just say now. And we can.
This isn't Software Engineers Anonymous.
Yeah.
You know who we are.
Perhaps it should be, but yeah. As far as I'd be a hypocrite if I said that I wanted my hobby to become my job, because I spent so much time on the show talking about how the confusion between job and hobby in gaming is one of the big things that hurts gaming. I've considered looking more seriously into broadcasting as a career.
I just graduated college, the Bachelor of Fine Arts. So I'm looking to be an illustrator, and I'm going to be aiming for the gaming field too. So I guess that's what I'm going to be doing. I quit Starbucks too, but it doesn't really count.
I also just graduated, and I graduated with a degree in environmental science, with which I have no idea what I'm going to do. But I'm going to do something. If any of you employ environmental scientists, but realistically, talking about doing my hobby as a profession, I would love to. Nothing would make me happier. And the closest thing I can actually think of to gaming for a living would be acting, and you know, I'm definitely going to try my hand at it. We live in New York, so why not?
I think Caroline has more to do with her degree than I will eventually once I get it. After a long time of jumping around, I finally decided to be professionally unemployed because I went for a religion major and a history minor. But, I mean, it's something that I'm trying to go for, so far right now I'm just a student. And as for making my hobby into a profession, that'd be great if I could find a way to make it pay. Yes, please.
Well, I'm a software engineer, and I've already turned one hobby into a profession. And if I turned every hobby into a profession, I'd have about 8 jobs. So,
my other big hobby is wine, and I'd love to turn that into a profession.
Yeah. I guess something else to kind of think about as far as wanting to get into the field. It's podcasting is just another great way to meet a lot of people in the community. And that's a benefit that I think at least one of our co-hosts is, you know, kind of exercising. He wants to write. And this is a good way to meet people and get his name out.
Well, my hobby sort of is my profession because I develop computer games. And I am a software engineer in that.
Can I get your card? I'm a teacher / missionary in South Korea. I really don't have any aspirations for my hobby to become my profession. I like it being my hobby. You know, that way it's more fun and I enjoy it. I like Paul, I want it to be self-supporting, but it pretty much is, so right now, but that's not from the podcast, it's from my written stuff.
I'm a New York Times best-selling novelist. That's what I do for my day job. The podcast that I do, like I say, I teach writing at conventions. I teach at Gen Con, certainly. And at certain symposiums, and I started doing a newsletter about how to write a newsletter because there's only so many people you can teach, you know, at a convention over a certain amount of time. And the podcast has been, according to what people tell me, has been really helpful for a lot of them. And so that's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's way cool. And hopefully I'll be breeding a new generation of authors that will destroy the careers of all the authors that are taking up my shelf space in the stores. Not altruistic at all. I just, you know, I want little velociraptors to get the other dinosaurs out of the way so I have much more range. But, you know, so it's all tied together. I mean, you know, what I'm doing with the podcast is all tied up in what I do for a living anyway. So.
I take it you're not going to market your anti-velociraptor technology?
No, I look at it this way. You know, if I'm breeding the little velociraptors, as long as I stay ahead of them, I'm okay. Because the other plodding dinosaurs won't. You know, and then they'll just go for the easy pickings, and that's fine by me. You know, I can teach them a lot. I don't have to teach them everything.
More questions?
Oh, yeah.
You've
mentioned
earlier that you said you keep them down to 15 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Does that mean you put out more in the month or so? Or?
No. No. I averaged over last year. I averaged one every 2 weeks, but there was a good 8-week period at the beginning of this year when I was actually writing, when I didn't manage to knock any shows out writing and stuff like that. This is one of the problems and I don't know about the rest of you. I know for me, doing a podcast, because it's not my paying job, there are times there are interruptions. Like my parents came and stayed for a week, and you know I love my parents dearly, but God, I couldn't get anything done during that week, you know, and I sure as hell wasn't going to do a podcast. You know, I mean, that's, you know, there would be hammering in the house or other things would be happening, you know, and so you just can't.